It's the Mike Tech Show, show number 351. This show is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the podcast. I'm your host, Mike Smith. Thank you very much for downloading and subscribing to the show. Please visit the main website at miketechshow.com. You can email me suggestions for future show topics or any question. My email address is miketechshow@gmail.com. You can leave me a voicemail message, and in a couple minutes here, the first voicemail message, and I'm going to play this early, is really going to launch a lot of what I'm going to be talking about tonight and just answering his question, which I think is a great question about setting a static IP address on your machine. Very good question. And then I have lots of great emails that we're going to get into some really interesting topics. My voicemail phone number is my Skype number, and it's 240-949-2450, and that's Mike Tech Show, all one word, on Skype. You can follow me on the social networks, Twitter and Facebook, twitter.com/Mike Tech Show, and you can send me a friend request on Facebook, and that's facebook.com/Mike Tech Show. Tomorrow night, a reminder, I will be co-hosting Computer America with Carrie Holzman at 10 p.m. Eastern Time for both hours. I am looking forward to it. So if you enjoy Carrie and I together, it's another way to catch us. That is tomorrow night, Friday night, April 8th on Computer America at 10 p.m. Let's kick things off with this voicemail message.
Yes. Hey, this is Carlos in Kansas. And I've been listening to your show, and I really appreciate it. What you've been doing for us as listeners and helping us out as technicians. I had a question. Set up a computer remotely at a small business. They had one computer there, and the employee lived in a different location, and she was accessing that computer. I set it up remotely, did the port forward and everything on a Linksys router, and she had a laptop with Windows 7 and Windows Vista, and she would access the computer, which is a XP machine, remotely from wherever. Everything worked great on the install, but my question is, the router got unplugged by accident, and it assigned different IP address to the computer, so she wasn't able to access it remotely. And this has happened more than one occasion. So my question is, how can you assign a private address on the router for that computer where it'll stick and that doesn't change anymore? That way we don't have that problem anymore. I'm not really for sure how to do that. If you can help me with that, I would greatly appreciate it. Thanks, and appreciate everything.
On setting up a static IP address, first, you want to look at the router settings, and you want to see what block of IP addresses are being given out. And that changes on router to router. So let's pick, for example, Linksys or D-Link router. If you have a Linksys router, it usually is 192.168.1.1 is the default IP address. And then it will give out IP addresses that it assigns to systems that need an IP address. It will assign starting from .100, maybe all the way up to .254, or maybe from 100 to 150. You have to see the range. Now, hopefully, in the settings in the router, you have to take a look, or you have to have this user take a look. And if it starts at 100, now you can statically assign any number lower than 100, but not .1, because .1 is usually the router, start it maybe .20 or .10, and now you can statically assign an IP address that never changes. And this is where you would then go and set the port forwarding rule to that IP address. So how do you assign a static IP address? Depending on the operating system, you want to make your way to control panel. So this is good for XP, Vista, and Windows 7. So get to control panel. In my case, I'm using Windows 7 very close to Vista. There is a network and sharing center. So in the control panel, try to pick classic view on the left-hand side if it's XP or Vista. In Windows 7, I like to view by large icons, because now if you're viewing by large icons, you can now pick the right option. And I'm in Windows 7, I'm picking network and sharing center. In one of the other operating systems, it's going to be just networking. Let's pick this right now, the networking and sharing center. On the left-hand side, there's change advanced sharing settings or change adapter settings. So I'm picking change adapter settings. This is where you can pick network connections in XP or Vista, and you can see which one is your local area connection. And that's the one that's connected right now to your home network. If you right-click on that adapter and then pick left-click properties, so we right-click and then left-click properties, then go down to Internet Protocol Version 4, highlight it, click properties, and this is the window where you can set your static IP address. Right now, it'll say obtain an IP address automatically. This is where you would then click the radio button to use the following IP address. This is where you assign that IP address that's not being assigned on the current router that we talked about a minute ago. So here, if 192.168.1.20 is available, you can give it that. The subnet mask, for right now, to keep it simple, 99.99% of the time on a home local area network, it's going to be 255.255.255.0. So we're not going to get into subnet masks right now, because I think that would be a little bit too complicated to get in there and talk about it. For default gateway, that's the IP address of the router. So when you were logged into the router, you had to give it an IP address to log in via your browser. If it's 192.168.1.1, this is where you would put it in. You can have two choices here for your DNS. You can use static DNS numbers, or you can have it obtain it automatically. If you want to pick static, it's very simple to use one of the public DNS servers from Google, which is 8.8.8.8. And then there's another good one I like using, which is level 3, which is 4.2.2.1. If you don't know any other DNS servers, there are two that you can use. Your internet provider also provides DNS servers, so you can use them. And you can find that out by going to the status option in your router. When you're logged into the router and you pick the status option of the router, it usually displays what the DNS is. Now, on past shows, you've heard me talk about OpenDNS, where you can kind of protect your network using DNS entries that kind of filter your websites going through this company called OpenDNS, and they can filter out the bad things, the bad sites, the phishing sites, sites that try to trick you into going to bad places. Or yeah, maybe you want to restrict access on your network. This is where you can do it at the PC level by putting in open DNSs, DNS entries. So to keep it simple, you might want to, for right now, leave it to automatically pick the DNS from the router so you don't have to get confused. But I wanted to cover where you can manually set that. Once you do this, you do not have to reboot your computer. And you should double check after you statically assign your IP address, open up your browsers and test and make sure you can get to the internet, make sure everything's working from a networking perspective. Now you can go into the router setup and change the port forwarding to forward that remote access port back to the static IP address. That is the way to solve your problem, Carlos. I hope that helps. Please email me and let me know if you were able to follow that and that worked. And I think your question, a lot of people have that same issue where if you want to set up something where you're going to be doing some port forwarding on your router, you don't want to do that to an IP address that's dynamic and it's going to change. You want to send it to a static IP address, but you also have to be careful that you do not have a duplicate IP address. That's why I went through the steps to check what is the block of IP addresses that are being given out. Now, if you're Verizon and you have their router, the Verizon router tends to give .2, which is the very next IP address, if it's 192.168.1.1, they may be assigning in DHCP .2 all the way up for the whole subnet. You want to change that and edit the DHCP to begin at a number higher. So you want to begin at number 100 at least. Sometimes I go to 200. Because how many devices are going to be getting an IP address in your house? You think about that, and if you're going to give it a block of 100, that's you're probably safe. What I like to do is give out IP addresses from 100 to 199, and then I go static for printers. I go 200 and above, and then for workstations, below 100. So you could see where you can start segmenting, you know, how you want to statically assign IP addresses. But for the purpose of what you're trying to do, Carlos, I think you're not going to have a problem assigning one static IP address to the machine, setting up the port forwarding. I think you're going to be good to go with that. Hopefully that helps. The first email for the evening, Ustream Video Screen Broadcast. This is from MS Small Biz, who is in the chat. I was testing using Ustream to show others how to do something on a server, and the screen broadcast on the user's end was very fuzzy, whereas I've noticed when you do it, the screen is pretty good. Any tricks, or is this strictly a Ustream limit to those who don't want to pay? I don't pay for my Ustream, so set up. Was the Ustream broadcaster pulling video from Webcam Max, which was set to grab a specific window. That window was a full screen view on a secondary monitor of an RDP session to a server. That should have been fine. I use Webcam Max, which you're using here. The only thing I can think of from a screen is what was the resolution of the screen. Right now, my screen is a 22-inch LCD, and it's 1680 by 1050. That's a pretty good resolution, and you're only grabbing a portion of that. So is it an LCD monitor, and what is the resolution of the screen that you're capturing? And maybe you need to beef up the resolution of the screen. One other setting, when you're broadcasting on Ustream, there's a video quality and audio quality. My video quality, I put all the way to the end. I want the highest possible video quality when I am broadcasting on Ustream. I think it's a combination of things. I think it's the screen resolution, combination with what do you have the video quality set at, and then what's your uplink in transmitting that, and then what's the downlink of the person looking at it, and then what's going on with Ustream depending on the server that you're in. So there's a lot of variables here at play. I'm using the registered version of Webcam Max. I own it. As a matter of fact, it just upgraded tonight to the latest version. I only use Webcam Max once a week. I only use FileZilla once a week. And wouldn't you know it, tonight when I go to launch them, they all have upgrades. So I upgraded my FileZilla. I upgraded Webcam Max. I'm using 7.2.6.8. It seems like every week Webcam Max has a new version. So I strongly recommend that you have a registered, legitimate version of Webcam Max, that it's upgraded to the latest version, that the video settings are set to the highest possible setting on your video quality, and then make sure that you're at the optimal screen resolution on an LCD monitor. Now you're cooking, and at least you've put yourself into a position where you'll have the best video that you can for Ustream. And that's all I do. Hopefully that helps you with some of those settings. This is from Jason. And he says, the subject here is your workflow in your consulting business. Mike, I'm curious to know what type of software you use to manage your consulting business. I started my repair consulting business about a year ago, and I'm always looking for tips and tricks on how to manage the workflow of my business. Do you still use paper forms, or have you switched over to an electronic document system? And mine is more paper than you would think. What about invoices and money management? Do you use QuickBooks? Do you use any web-based apps? I purchased the TechNibble kit and a few books, but I always feel like there could be a better streamlined way using technology to do this. Maybe good old-fashioned paper and file cabinets is the best way. If you have any advice, that would be great. Thanks, and keep up the awesome work with the show, Jason. Jason, I use QuickBooks Pro. But remember, I don't know if you know, I talked about this, a few months ago. I hired a bookkeeper to help enter everything, because every invoice I have is done with Microsoft's Word's default invoice. I catalog everything. I save every invoice with a distinct name using initials for my client. So let's say I have ABC Paper Company. Well, then their invoice would be ABC, the year, month, day. And I save it, and I keep them in separate folders and, of course, all, you know, directories on my system, and all of them are backed up. I gave the stack of every single invoice that I generated for the year, and I had the bookkeeper enter it into QuickBooks. For expenses, keep it easy. Get a business debit card. And this is what I do for MHS Consulting. I have a business debit card that I use for all of my purchases. I then take advantage of online bill pay that's free with my business checking account. And what I'll do is I'll use the bill pay to pay all my bills. So this way, there is an electronic transaction recorded for every single purchase. If I buy something from Amazon, if I buy something, I use that single debit card. Now, most banks allow you to be able to download that, and it's very easy. You can download it in Excel, and you can manipulate it. And this is what I did to then get a hold of organizing my expenses and then printed those results for my bookkeeper to enter in. It only took him 4 hours. And he entered a year's worth of data into my QuickBooks, then generated the accountant's reports that I sent off to my accountant. with also some other things I had to fill out for personal and for my wife and for my son. So there was a bunch of things I gathered together, gathered all the W-2s, or excuse me, the 1099s, and I sent that all to my accountant. My accountant literally today just got back all of my tax returns completely finished. And let's say I am very happy. And I'm happy because I'm organized. And although it sounds like I'm not organized, at least having it at a place that's easy to record and get those transactions, it really makes it a lot easier to set this up and to report on it. Now, that's only half the battle. That's now taking care of invoicing, and it's taking care of expenses and getting it recorded for taxes. What about the recording of the work that you're doing for the workflow? This is where I have a problem, and I fall short in this. So knowing this a few months ago, that this was a problem of mine, of tracking all the time that I'm spending, I literally, from a CVS, and I know you could buy this from Staples, any place, it's a statement, two-part, carbonless book of just blank statements. I carry this with me wherever I go consulting. And even though I don't give it to the client, I fill out a sheet on recording the time that I spent and what did I do. And then at the end, how many hours. And I don't leave until this is done. I also keep this by my phone. I tell you, I'm recording this on Thursday. Wednesday, when I was sitting right here at my desk, four retainer clients called me one after the other on questions. I filled out four sheets here. I have an inbox that I at least put the sheets. So now, at worst case, I'll pay someone to enter that time so I can record it. Or I'll go back to it and take them, and then now I can follow it. One of the things that you have to do is get it recorded. And for me, there's nothing beats manual. And to have multiple copies and to be able to at least have it as a sheet, wow, that's great. Backflow in the chat just says, how about a voice recorder? That's a great idea. As a matter of fact, I considered that, but then getting the voice off of my iPhone, I was going to save it in Evernote and record the voice messages. And sometimes I do that when I'm at a client and I got to remember to do something. I'll bring up Evernote on my iPhone and I will click a record and record it as a message, because then I'll get it as a WAV file. So then I could just bring up my Evernote client. When it syncs, I'll get it back. There's also, as a Winston put, Dragon Dictate is incredible. Dragon Dictate, I've been using on the iPad 2, and it is phenomenal in speech recognition and converting that to text. It is incredible. I'm shocked. You don't even have to train it, and just download the app and you'll love it. So that's a great tip. I'm glad Winston brought that up. It is a very good program to use for recording. So that might be a way to help with notes, but I'll tell you, I find myself with this manual paper trail a great way where I've stopped some of those hours that are falling through the cracks. It really has stopped. Something else, I use a portable scanner for doing receipts and notes and all my manual notes. And it was an $89 scanner. I think I got on the Home Shopping Network, ViewScan or something. I will find the link and put it in the show notes. But a little hand scanner that will scan all of my paper onto an SD card. And then I take the SD card and just copy it into directories on my system. Winston says, why not take a picture of it with your iPad? You know, that's a great idea. I'm thinking about that, of doing that. There's a great scanner that's being advertised, Neat Receipts and Neat Scanner, but the price is $400. And I'm not ready to pop for 400 yet. You know, 89, that wasn't bad. You know, with like four easy payments or something like that, it was worth it. As a matter of fact, I pulled the trigger on buying that and spread it over the easy payments that was recommended on the Home Shopping Network. I did that because they're both HSN and QVC will take back anything. As long as you keep it nice, they'll take it back. And I said, it's worth the one payment that I know I'll get refunded if I have to return this if I don't like it. And the first day it arrived, I'm scanning all of my notes from a couple clients, and it did a tremendous job. And so getting that manual handwritten note converted to a JPEG, and then it comes with OCR software that can help try to turn it to text. Not my fast handwriting, but maybe somebody else will have luck with that. It did a good job. And I said, you know what? This is worth keeping. I've had other things that I've purchased that way that I've sent back and they gladly refund you. Don't discount those places as a way to test out products. If you're willing to go through the process of eating the one charge and then go through the process of repackaging it, taking it, and having it shipped back. Depending on the item, it may be worth doing that. You have all these options, Jason, and I hope that helped you where you can take what you're doing, listen to what I've just described is my process, and then build your own successful process. Let me know what you're doing. We can revisit this. This is from Haroon. Hope you're well. As you've been a network engineer for many years, I just wanted to ask if you could outline best practices for setting up DNS, specifically from a security perspective, things like how to prevent DNS rebinding attacks, cache pollution, etc. I follow the instructions on Active Directory DNS integrated setup on domain controllers. I don't deviate from the process. What I do make sure is that you have a very good firewall in front of your servers. If your DNS servers are sitting in the DMZ, the zone, which is an area that is more vulnerable than your regular network, that's where maybe you have two firewalls, or you have an area where you have web servers, then it gets a little hairy. You got to make sure you have a reliable firewall that any kind of penetration into the network will be stopped and blocked. Checkpoint is a very good firewall. Even SonicWall, I like. Juniper, I've been happy with. So there's lots of good firewalls out there. They cost some money. I assume that if you're going to be doing DNS, that it's a company that can afford a reliable and secure firewall. Now make sure that your servers are protected. And if you just go through the standard setup and you're not unnecessarily opening up shares or make sure you control your administrator access and domain administrators. Make sure that you review that and that it's restricted only to those who absolutely have to be a domain administrator. That is the way to lock it down. There's no magic here. There's nothing that from the setup process that you would do. If you follow your normal setup for a Active Directory, DNS integrated server, you're set. Now, if you're going to set up a DNS server totally separate from Active Directory using bind, DNS and bind in Unix or Linux, I'm not your man on that. I am not a DNS guy when we come outside of the Active Directory environment. Take a look at just following the Microsoft instructions on setting up Active Directory and your DNS. Now, what I like is to use the forwarders. If the DNS request comes in, you can set up forwarders and you can prioritize them. And I like to put the following. I like to use one, which is the outside server who's my ISP. Then I like to put as a secondary and a tertiary DNS for forwarders. I like to use what I mentioned earlier for the voicemail answer. I like to use 8.8.8.8, and then I like to use 4.2.2.1. So now you have multiple DNS external servers that in case one's down or there's a problem, that request that's going to happen on the network, it's going to work. So hopefully that has helped you. Email here from Jennifer. She has a great question. Hi, Mike. This is a comment on show 350, last week's show. This was another great show, just like your other ones. You're so full of relevant info and practical advice. I often listen to them more than once just to absorb it all. I think also a good idea would be to add a link to show 350, the list of links for the blue screen of death emergencies. These are things you mentioned in the podcast itself, of which I'll want to be reminded when my time comes, knock on wood. I think I covered that, but I'll tell you what, I'll go back and listen to it. And if I missed putting some links down, or anyone listening to this, if you know of a link that I missed that needs to be added to those show notes, let me know, because I can easily go back in WordPress and add those links. As a matter of fact, if I ever forget and you catch me on that and I miss a link, let me know. Send me an email and I will put that back and add it to the show, because I try my best when I'm editing and sometimes I miss one or two. So thank you. And, Jennifer, I will make sure that gets updated. Thanks for all you share with the podcast. I'd like to show my appreciation through Amazon purchases, but I'm in France. If I go through your show link to Amazon.com, then go to Amazon.fr and make the purchase, do you know if the commission comes back to you? Love the music too. Take care, Jennifer. Great question. And she brings up the way you can support the Mike Tech Show, which is to use my Amazon link. But the link I have is for everybody who's based in the United States. What about all the other countries? I am formulating a question to Amazon. I would very much like to put a link under my USA link, which says pick your country. And I want to have, because I have listeners in Canada, the UK, Australia, France, that want to use my Amazon link. So if you use my USA link and try it, I don't know. And if you then go to Amazon.fr, here's the way to see. When you get to Amazon.fr, in the link, if it has Mike Tech Show -20, somewheres in that incredible link for the product that you're at, if in that embedded is Mike Tech Show -20, I am getting the credit. That's the main thing. And I don't know if it's supported in multiple countries. And I am going to try to organize that, because you are not the first person to ask. Kate has often asked me, who she resides in Canada, and I have a large UK-based audience. I will work on this because it means commissions. And for right now, everybody, if you could continue to use my Amazon link, I really appreciate it. And that is a great way to support the show. There's also the donations button on the right-hand side, but you also have other products that are not just Amazon, but if you GoDaddy and buy.com, use those links, I really appreciate it. The final email for the evening, and then I do have some music. This is a great email from Scott. Hi, Mike. I've searched both your wiki and your show websites, but could not find any recommendations for a network vulnerability tool. But I might be searching for the wrong terminology. I'm looking for a comprehensive tool that scans our Windows-based network and both identifies and documents to satisfy our financial auditors any vulnerabilities. I have multiple comments on this. I found the Bellarc product, $5,000, and the free tool for CIS members, $2,500 membership fee for a company of less than 100 employees. But these are somewhat expensive for a small company. The CIS membership might be affordable for us, But I wanted to check with you in case there are less expensive or even free options. Obviously, I could copy the CIS documentation and create my own checklist, but I'd rather have something that's automated and continuously updated and improved. Enjoying your Ustreams weekly. Thanks for your time, Scott. Scott's an IT director, and he has a voicemail. Scott, I have a couple answers here. One, I am going to contact you directly because I have a recommendation, and that is you need a real penetration test done by someone that has the credentials, that has the capability, and they can do a penetration test, generate a formal report for you that will satisfy auditors. I've been in that position for SOX compliance, PCI compliance, FINRA. All these things are important, but it's also important to have an outside source. Most auditors, for any of those certifications, they don't like that you're doing it yourself. They want to see an outside firm doing it. So that's one. So if it's for compliance and for auditors, you really have to get this professionally performed on your network. You bring up a great point, and we discussed this email question in the pre-show. And I put this question out there on what's a good, free, open source network vulnerability scanner. I got lots of feedback, and one of them is the Tenable Network Security, and this is Nessus. And you can use Nessus to perform the vulnerability scan of your network, and this is free. There's another one called Nmap, and Nmap is Network Mapper, and it's a free open source utility for network exploration or security auditing. So now you got another one. I have a link to SecTools, SECTools.org. This lists the top 100 network security tools. Nessus is number one. Now they have Wireshark is number two, but that's for sniffing traffic that's already there, and then you have to interpret it. Number three is Snort. Snort is a good product that you could put in place for a permanent to stop network penetrations, but it's not going to be a scanner on your network that's going to actually scan your Windows systems and look for vulnerabilities. Okay, but Snort's a great product. It's a great intrusion detection system, and that's the best way to put it. And I actually work with Winston with Snort for a client of Winston's. Next, we have OpenVAS, and this is the Open Vulnerability Assessment System. So I have a collection of great links that will be in the show notes, but if this is to get certified for an audit for any kind of the alphabet soup of certifications, HIPAA, PCI, SOX, FINRA, then you really need to get an outside service to provide that. And Scott, I'm going to contact you with some options there. All right, that is it for the tech content for tonight's show. I have some independent music. And since I didn't have a lot of time to look for music, and same thing happened last week, and since I get such great feedback when I play music from Liz Longley, I said, you know what? Let's do another song. This is Liz Longley, and the song is Queen. Give a listen, and then I'll be back to wrap up.
Someday I'll be queen and watch the children flood the street from my window. and I'll sip on raspberry tea as I search for the faces of the smiles in my dreams. And someday when I'm queen, I'll wear jewels in my hair and red wine on my lips, and the king will call me beautiful, say I look like a painting that's been framed in gold, and he'll twirl me around while the horses run wild and the moon molests down on velvet sheets when I'm the queen.
The song Queen from her CD Somewhere in the Middle, and I will have a link in the show notes to her website where you can purchase all of her CDs, and the website is Liz Longley, LizLongley.com. I want to thank everybody for downloading and subscribing to the show. I really appreciate it. Thank you for all of your support. I hope you learned something. I hope that you enjoyed the show. Spread the word and tell people about the Mike Tech Show who aren't listening. And, you know, they might be able to help them out. They might pick up something and learn something. Just thank you so much for all your support. That's it. I'll talk to you next week. Same time, same channel. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to The Mike Tech Show, a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. Please visit techpodcast.com.